we'll find out the latest on New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's bridge scandal.
The scandal stems from traffic problems back in September when lanes of the George Washington Bridge were closed in an apparent case of political retaliation. Joining us now is Neil King, reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Neil, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure, Rob.
Well, briefly, give us, please, the background of the story. What happened?
Well, I mean, going back to early September, all of a sudden, people noticed in Fort Lee, New Jersey, which is right on the banks of the Hudson, right at the foot of the George Washington Bridge, that the traffic patterns, basically, there had always been three booths going in to pay your toll. All of a sudden, the three lanes that all the traffic from Fort Lee would use to get onto the George Washington Bridge was reduced down to one toll booth. This caused huge backup all the way into the city, so that it even disrupted life in the town of Fort Lee itself. So questions were asked, why did this suddenly change? What brought this about? And it remained a mystery, with early on some suspicions that some kind of vendetta, some sort of some retribution of some kind was being exacted. But so that kind of rattled around. The election happened. Chris Christie was reelected by wide margins. And then various reporters, including a bunch of us at the Wall Street Journal, started writing, even in the middle of September, looking into this. Why had the Port Authority ordered this, et cetera? So lo and behold, Christie, of course, had denied that there was any involvement by his staff. That was several weeks ago. And then, boom, the morning before last, out come these emails that show that people very senior in his staff, up to his deputy chief of staff, actually had knowledge. When you go sort of thinking of like what kind of smoking gun, if you actually have a smoking gun of an email from a deputy chief of staff of the governor saying, let the traffic problems begin in Fort Lee, you know, it doesn't get much better than that. And so all of a sudden, Governor Christie, you know, presumptive GOP 2016 presidential front runner, among other things, and kind of a darling of the party since he won his big reelection in November, has a big problem on his hands, a big credibility problem, and also a problem where all of a sudden the image that he had built up as gruff, sometimes, you know, in your face, straight talking, but ultimately kind and well-meaning governor was looking very bullyish. And that's going to be a problem for him, potentially.
He tackled this head on in a long apology press conference yesterday. He said the buck stops with me, though. He said he didn't know about this. He did not give that order. He was not informed. His staff, he said, lied to him. He apologized to the people of the city affected. What do you think, or what's been the reaction nationally to this apology so far?
Well, I mean, the reaction yesterday after that really pretty extraordinary press conference, which was a great vintage Christie performance, almost 2 hours, took 90 questions. The reaction, particularly among Republicans and particularly those who support him, which is a large portion of the establishment of the party, was, wow, good job, showed sort of Christie at his best, out there, forthright, taking responsibility. But there's also just a lot of overhang apprehension, because there's a lot of not only unanswered questions, but a lot of stones that still have to be unturned. And he is going to face very large exposure for a long time as a whole bunch of different inquiries now unfold. The entire press corps is looking through all these documents. 1,000 more documents came out today. The Democratic Party of New Jersey and nationally has been totally activated. And because of the blanketness and the emotional, you know, straightforwardness of his denials of any kind of knowledge, if knowledge starts to come out or anything links him to this after all, you know, that could be really damaging. So his exposure is large.
We've got a few, as you mentioned, inquiries, a class action suit from some New Jersey residents. I imagine more may join that suit. Is that something that's going to keep this alive for a while into the future?
That's a good example. I mean, so all of a sudden you have this, what they want to at least have to make into a class action suit of people that were affected by these 4 days of traffic jams. Then you have the state legislature itself having subpoena power and doing its own investigating. And then you have the U.S. Attorney's Office, which yesterday announced that it's going to look at least whether there was potentially some federal crimes possibly involved in, you know, closing off portion of a federal interstate system for political purposes. So that's just some of it. And then the other thing that's really worth noting, I think, I was just looking through my Twitter feed before we came on, and, you know, coverage and sort of the way people look at you, particularly from the reporting side, really matters a lot. And, you know, going into this, Christie was a person who had a certain sort of Teflon coating. now all of a sudden the whole vein of reporting has been opened up. So, you know, one of the stories I saw, 8 videos of Christie yelling, name-calling, and belittling people. Or, you know, it's another story that somebody had dug up. Meet the other mayor that's accusing Chris Christie of retaliation. So you have this whole can of worms that's being opened where it's going to be, you know, full season to look at sort of this other side of Chris Christie that very few people would have paid attention to a month ago. And that's not going to be good.
Looking at Governor Christie's presidential aspirations, let's suppose that the class action suit, the federal, the legislative inquiries are all best case scenarios for him. It turns out it's exactly as he said yesterday. He didn't know anything about this. How much in that case damage do you think it does to his presidential hopes?
Well, I think it's going to take, and it already will have taken some of the gloss off. You know, after, in the last couple of months, when people go out and ask nationally, who do you like for the 2016, he has been the front runner. You know, he gets about 25%, something like that, and then it falls off. But that's normal when you're 2 years out. And the thing about him and what gives him the kind of popularity and what makes him really be seen by a lot of the establishment types is that he has a broad level of support. Women tend to like him a lot more than is normally the case with Republican candidates, Hispanics, et cetera. So we're gonna have to see to what extent there's sort of a damage that's been done because of people looking at him in a different way, maybe even whether he or not he was involved directly with this. It's the idea of like, well, is this sort of the attitude, the kind of culture that he has created or encourages within his office? We'll have to see, and it's going to take a little while before we have any kind of data, but there's I think it's pretty certain that he's going to take some hit in that regard.
There's a wide hypothetical field of GOP presidential hopefuls, including 2 men from Wisconsin, Governor Scott Walker, Congressman Paul Ryan. Who, if anyone, would benefit from backsliding in the Chris Christie momentum?
I think both of those two certainly would. I mean, you know, there's a big kind of just to the right of the middle sort of lane that is clearly open that I think may be one of the most promising lanes to be in 2016.
As long as it's not closed.
Exactly. Or the toll's too high. You know, if he suddenly is crippled, you're going to see Jeb Bush run look all the more promising. Certainly somebody like Scott Walker. I think Paul Ryan would be a decent candidate for that. Or you also start to bring other people in, like Rick Snyder in Michigan, who isn't often talked about, but he would be somebody that would very much fit that bill. And it's also about where does the donor class, the big money type, sort of start to look as an alternative to Chris Christie. Money and organization matter a lot, and if people start to lose confidence in him, the next thing is like, well, who will step up to be the one that sort of, you know, receives the benefits of that, the spillover?
It's January 2014. Is this the kind of thing that we're all buzzing about now, but in a year and a half when people start running their primary campaigns, visiting Iowa, that sort of thing, we'll sort of vaguely remember it as a distant bit of history?
You know, probably and possibly. The thing that's so hard to predict in these things is so that he had his big press conference yesterday, everybody thought, whew, he escaped a bullet there. But this is just sort of the first phase of one of these things. And for all we know, we'll be looking back and say, wow, we thought he had gotten, you know, everything looked great for him on that Thursday. And now 2 weeks later, can you believe what happened to the guy? Or it could be the other way around and he does sort of come out of this relatively unscathed and we look back and kind of laugh at the conclusions. Because a lot of people, both like Glenn Beck and various of the conservative talk radio people that are no fans of Chris Christie, have already written off his presidential aspirations. And you find a lot of bloggers on the left having done the same. Those all may prove to be premature, that's for sure.
Neil, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob, it was a real pleasure.
That's Neil King. He's a reporter for The Wall Street Journal.